Welcome to this week's edition of Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. Each week, I'll be discussing different issues and different ideas with entrepreneurs from Malta and overseas to help you change or start your own business. Welcome to this week's Interview with Entrepreneurs. And this week, I've got a bit of a serial one. I've got Wesley Alul this week, well, this month, yeah. This year from Quizando.
Yes.
But you have like a whole load of stuff. You have Untangled Media. You do the Comedy Nights, which is probably where most people know you from. Ticket Line, which you can't live without. Find It as well with a nice puppy dog.
I've tried to solve a lot of different problems, mainly using tech or entertainment.
Okay.
That's sort of been my gig for the last, since I was 25, since I decided to stop being a DJ.
Ah, so you were a DJ first.
Yes.
So this is not unusual for you.
No. Especially this studio was where I spent 3 years of my life between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. every day.
Wow.
We were the first co-hosted radio show in Malta, myself and Chris Dingley.
That must have been
a long time ago. It was. it was fun. It was actually where we actually learned a lot of the techniques we then later used in the Comedy Nights, like
you know,
using songs and using their music and then coming up with our own words. Those first started actually here in the studio. We sort of like, you do something, you try it out, and then you learn from it and you adapt it and throw it into something else. And that's what I've been doing.
So what did you do after DJing then?
So after being a DJ, I was 25. Mm-hmm. I was a full-time DJ at the time, working five nights a week in clubs, just doing an actual easy shift, an 8 p.m. till 12 p.m. shift.
Oh, nice one. Okay.
No, it was fantastic. Earning amazing money in a brown envelope, as it used to happen back in the day. And pre-euro time. So I think I was walking away with about 200 Maltese in my pocket for a 25-year-old.
Wow.
Per week. Yes. And then I had other jobs on the side and I was playing with a bunch of different things. But I said at 25, this can't be my life. I can't do this forever.
You can't not go for dinner ever.
Yeah. not go for dinner. And you know, it was a Monday to Friday gig, but it was just like, this is not all I want. So on December 30th, which was my last gig of 2004, I said, okay, guys, I'm done. I quit as of tonight, and thank you very much for your time. And then I didn't know what I was going to do.
Okay.
I had no clue whatsoever. And basically, I had worked in a bar before that. I used to be a bar manager, as one does when they're young. And I had approached a friend of my back then boss, but also friend, James Calvert. Running a directory business at the time, a physical directory business for niche markets, so weddings, cars. Just creating these things. I used to go door to door. And I was saying, so what you doing? And I said, well, I'm doing this. And it didn't interest me at all. It wasn't that fun. And I was like, maybe we could do something a little bit more fun. So we sat down in the business and the business was going okay, but there's a lot of problems with it. I'm not sure if you guys know the printing business, but that is, constant. You have to print, roll out, there's bills, people pay late, and it just becomes a bit of a cyclical nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, how about we take what you're doing and put it online on the internet?
The
internet, which in Malta they didn't believe in. Back in when I started, they did not believe in it at all. I mean, you've been doing the internet as well.
I have a similar story. Yeah, I had a boss who was just like, "Oh, humor her. Let her build a website. You know. Look where we are today." But
it was that. So it was like, okay, this could be interesting. I love tech, although I never studied any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this can probably help someone. So the first thing we actually were doing is he had an office, but we were setting up a new office, and I'm lazy, so I didn't want to go through and go. You know, place to place, find furniture and whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, how about they look online? So I Googled Malta desks and Malta doors and Malta cars, and nothing was coming up. We were getting Malta, Ohio, Malta, Texas, Malta, New York.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, this is not going to be easy to do it this way. And that's when everything clicked. And I was like, okay, what if we can have one website that will come up in Google and we can get everybody's business through that, and people can believe in the internet again. And because the internet's going to be a big thing, even though at the time we were using the mobile phones didn't quite have internet, they just sort of did. And it's like, okay, this is where it's all going to be. And I built that. We built that first one. Our first version took, I think, 2 months to build. I had my brother actually do the tech side of it.
All right.
Who's now like he's the head of the MDIA in Malta. So he's gone quite a ways in the tech.
He learned a lot along the way.
And yeah, he built that first tech side for us. We just started going out and knocking on people's doors and trying to teach them about the internet.
Okay.
Teach them what it was and how it could help them. And then after that, we had to tell them, yeah, and if you pay us, we can help get you there. And they were like, but I'm paying you for thin air. That was the concept. I'm not printing anything. Huh. In fact, I remember the initial prices, the actual prices today are not too far off from the initial prices, but they were 40 Maltese lira, which was, I mean, 98 euros.
But people think that time is free, servers are free.
Everything's free, so
cables and
why not?
Stuff.
So it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. But over the first year, we built our first client base of about 1,200 clients knocking on doors. I was just knocking and cold calling. I had no idea of sales whatsoever. And I learned the very hard way of trying to sell the product rather than...
Boom, talk to the hand.
Uh-huh. Rather than just sort of building relationships, I learned the very, very hard way. Once that sort of moved through and started doing well and people started getting business from it, then... the picture changed very drastically. People started seeing the value of the internet. So those clients who were on for like 40 euros a year or 40 Maltese a year, they said, ooh, I've got a lot of business from this. I have a website. Could you help get us over there? And I was like, okay. So at that time, I'd learned a lot of search engine optimization for our site. So then I started applying it on one site.
So that's where you put in particular words so people know it's, desk teak Malta.
Yes, but it was also understanding what, because this whole world of search engine optimization has various different sides to it. Okay. They have what's called the on-site. It's how it's built. So it's like if you're building a house, that you have to have foundations and that has to have, not in all cases. I heard a wonderful story this week about a house that was built with a column which they thought was full of concrete, but it was just built with bricks and cemented around, and then they put on another floor and then it collapsed. But anyway, that's a side story.
That can happen to internet sites too.
Yes, that can happen to internet sites too. And basically, I learned about the structure of what goes in and what Google's looking for. And essentially, I found out it was nothing more than like a really good table of contents. So like, when you have a book and you want to search for something, you had your index and your table of contents. That's essentially what SEO was to Google. It was a way for Google to understand what's happening on your website. And I said, okay, we did it for us, and I did it for first client, did it for the second client, got very bored very quickly because it's not a fun job. It's great when you see the client getting results, but I'm one of the guys, I sort of deviate very quickly from what I'm doing.
Yeah, but creative people are like that, and so it's serial entrepreneurs. You kind of start and not finish.
So we did it for a couple of clients, and money was coming in, everything's happy, and I said, okay, let's do the next thing. Let's create a system to build websites that takes everything I've learned about SEO and automatically does it for them.
Okay, cool.
And that's when Untangled Media came about. Untangled Media was basically, we invested in our own content management system. Mm-hmm. I took everything I learned to automatically do it for everybody.
Okay, so content management system, what's one of those?
It's like a little program. It's Facebook. Let's take Facebook as an example. That's like a content management system for people to share their information with other people. Uh-huh. You have a form. You have like a sort of form that you put in your name, your address, etc. And what I essentially built is the same type of form concept, but for businesses. So if you had products, same form concept, you just fill out those little details, and it will then do all the hard, heavy lifting for SEO for you.
Okay.
Because, this was all down to laziness from my side. I didn't want to do the work. So do it once.
Frankly, work smart, not hard.
Yes, that's it. That's the key thing.
Why would you want to do something the painful way?
Yeah, but some people like to do that. Some people enjoy the work.
I suppose you need that as well. You do need
the
plodders as well as the...
As the people are going to run through, because otherwise we'll all just be running at head speed and nobody's there to pick up the pieces. Built that. Then we built a couple of other internal products. Mm-hmm. But then we started focusing on other people's sites. So we were building websites, we were building business systems for people. I was just sitting down with people and sort of like trying to understand their business and see how IT and website and our websites and the things we were building could help them. So a lot of bespoke work, which was great. One of the internal sites we built was a lot of fun. It was again solving a problem, because that's what I found. This is when I started finding out what entrepreneurship is. It's always solving a problem for someone. And we needed to hire some more staff for the office, and we went out, we put an advert in the Times of Malta, as one does back in the day. I think we took out like a half page ad or something like that, spent a pretty penny, and we had got 5 responses back. And I was like, oh wow, okay, that's money gone. Yeah. That's money gone. What are we going to do? And from another project we'd built, What's On, the event directory, I said, you know what? We had a newsletter list, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to send them all out an advert to see if anybody wants a job. And I did so, and we got hundreds of replies.
More targeted.
More targeted. And I was like, whoa, hold on, are we onto something? And that's where Keep Me Posted came about.
Okay.
And so basically it was like, okay, and within 48 hours, we actually built Keep Me Posted, the original version of that.
Don't tell people it takes 48 hours.
With our content management system, it actually does.
Okay.
That was the key thing. We took that, we built it out, and we just got like an MVP ready, started testing the waters. People just started, in the sense, coming in, and that client base started growing dramatically, but it was a really boring business for me. So we
next,
literally.
Well, entrepreneur, you know.
Yeah. A colleague of ours was interested in that business more than we were, so passed on. We exited and moved on to the next thing. We had a couple of dodgy ones along the way that didn't go as well as planned. Some I didn't. Wasn't 100% into myself, but
is that like a? It sounded like a good idea, but like you say, your heart's not in it, or you didn't do research enough. What do you think?
It was one of them was called Mall 247. The idea was it was a directory for online sites in Malta that sold things.
Okay.
So like a digital shopping mall.
Yeah.
Because again, Google was a little bit too vast to figure out who's doing what, where, why, and how. Our business directory was a little bit too vast to get that. So this was just like, who provides online services?
Okay.
It was too early in the day when we were doing it. There was a couple along the way, like mass supermarkets where they have, you have a shop inside there sort of where. This was more like a directory of online shops. Anyway, we were too early into the game. The replication of the mall experience isn't exactly the same online.
It's not the same touching and feeling.
No, it's not the window shopping and having that expensive coffee and, you know, just wasting an afternoon away. Yeah, that was one that didn't do what we expected, but we learned, licked our wounds and sort of kept the name,
because it's a pretty good name.
I think we still have it. I have no idea. This is one of our biggest problems. We tend not to let go of domain names.
No, you should keep them.
We keep, even when clients sort of like decide to drop their domain name, we'll keep it because if there's any value, we'll keep it, and that sort of ends up with a hefty bill. But you never know. So yeah, we built all sorts of different things, and that sort of led us to do digital marketing for people. I was very early into the Facebook game. I think I started like actually doing the advertising within a week. They allowed advertising in Malta, so I started pushing things, but it was more for my own. My own things, because it was around 2008 when I started producing my own events.
Okay.
So how did
events come about? Doing tech stuff and DJing.
Well, I was in theater from 98. I was in theater.
Okay.
And I used to help. Oops, sorry about that. See, as you can see in tech world, your phone never stops. Back in 1998, I had started with the MADC. I fell in love with acting and being on theater, and I would do everything from being on the stage to being behind the scenes, doing lights, whatever it was. Uh-huh. In fact, by 2008, I'd become artistic director of the MADC.
Oh wow!
So it was quite a long sort of journey, and that was just my part time sort of thing. In 2008, though, I had a bit of a falling out, because again, I have this entrepreneurial side and also this artistic side. So I was trying to push MADC down that route. So like,
and they
guys, no, it was unfortunately where we were, the board didn't see eye to eye and I had to bow out on that. As again, it happens in business. Yeah. It happens in various different places. So I bowed out and I said, okay, let me start doing my thing. And
so what, you set up an actual theater company?
Per se, no. What I started doing is I teamed up with two of my buddies who mm-hmm. weren't doing anything that particular Christmas, Malcolm Gallia and Chris Dingley.
Mm-hmm.
And we did our first little show. We gave ourselves a title for our first show, which was Dingle Bells, Malcolm Smells.
I remember that.
Yes. And that was, we decided on this, I think it was somewhere around the 1st of November. We had booked the dates because it was clean uh-huh. in St. James. And we said, okay, let's do this. You start using Facebook right away, and I said, let's market this. Didn't spend too much money, and all of a sudden we had our initial run, I think was 5 or 6 shows. We'd sold out our 5 or 6 shows, but at the time we didn't have a script, we didn't have a concept. We just had a title and a poster, which was as far as we got at that point. It was like, okay, then we have to do the rest of it. As you know, necessity breeds so many amazing ideas, and we ended up with an improv show, which we never expected to go down, but we went down that. So that was a success. That started growing and growing and growing. Out
mm-hmm.
That we did 3 years of that, and again one fine, I think it was a September morning or August, September or August morning. It was very very late in the theatrical year because usually people plan things much
way ahead. Yes.
Yeah, and we're like, okay, let's start getting ready for Christmas. Let's just start talking about it. Chris was living in the UK. Malcolm mm-hmm. Malcolm was doing his thing, and it's like, and we get an email from Malcolm saying, oh, hey guys, I'm doing Panto this year.
All
right. Oh, okay.
That takes you out of the equation.
That's interesting. And the thing is, when comedy, the world of comedy, that's a lot of that is about chemistry. It's about knowing and trusting the people you work with, especially improv. You have to really trust them.
Mm.
And we're like, what are we going to do? Turned to Chris and said, shall we go bigger? Shall we try something bigger? Or actually, shall we try something else? And they said, okay, we probably need more of a team. And that's where we brought on our original Comedy Nights team. So Mark, Joe, Pia, Zanmeet, Steve Healy, Colin Fitz. We got them and said, you guys want to do a Christmas show with us? And they said, yeah. Again, we didn't 100% know the format at that time. And we started looking at the costs and we said, ooh, to pay these guys decently is going to be hard in such a small space like St. James. Shall we go bigger? And that's when we moved to Salesians, and we just sort of winged it, as one does. You see opportunities, you take them, and you're either going to live with the expense of it, or you're going to live with the success of it. And we, through the hard work that we put in over the years, we managed to, we pull it off. And the first year was completely pulling it off of the comedy nights, because we did not know what we were doing at all. When it came down to that size of a show. In fact, we had aimed to do an hour, 50-minute show, and we had a 2-hour and 20-minute show.
Uh-huh.
It was. Just
I don't remember. I just remember laughing all the way through. I've been to every single one.
Okay.
Just laughing. In fact, a couple of them I've been to twice because you're laughing so you miss things.
Yes.
And then if you talk about it, you're like, was I there then? It's like, I missed that completely. So you have to go again sort of in the January, you know, when you sort of...
And once things have calmed down. It was just fun that first year. And everybody had a great time. We learned a lot from it. We learned what the audience is looking for, what they want, etc. Uh-huh. The sketch wasn't our key thing. And then we allowed that to evolve as well. So brought in other actors, refined the writing, started to learn our voice. And that first year we were very... I would say apolitical. We didn't have much politics going on. By the second year, the politics started kicking in heavier because there was more to talk about. And we were saying, okay, what's our society? In fact, that is all about satire. We ended up all becoming about satire. And we were saying, okay, who are our audience out there? Who are the multi-celebrities? And you start listing them up. Okay, so you have Ira Lusko, and I'm going to go back then, Red Electric and a couple of bands. And then it's the
Zed
Joseph. It's literally Z-listers, or it's politicians. Every politician, if you name any one of them, everybody knows the politician inside out, what they've had for breakfast. Whereas they probably wouldn't know certain Clara Juice might not ring the bell of half the audience.
Yeah.
So that's where our audience and our society sort of shaped how the show went. We went down the political side, and then we sort of mixed in the two and let that grow. And that was fun. I was getting involved in the world of theater. Tried really big things. I ran Malta's first long running musical in Malta, Rock of Ages. Decided that was a good idea, without backing or funding, which was hard.
But that happened. But then you've also, apart from that, you've gone on to do back into sort of regular work, if yes. want of a better word.
Yeah, so in fact, there was a period I thought I was just going to go full-time entertainment. I was bringing down bands, I was bringing down Sesame Street, I was doing all these sort of big, oh, I'm going to become an event promoter.
With the ticket line, the search engine, the Facebook marketing,
sort of
that
everything,
stuff,
everything was sort
it.
Of tying in together. And in fact, to be very fair, I was getting bored of the like day-to-day tech world.
And taking your Christmas out every year. You know, your whole Christmas and then your whole summer.
Yeah, so it was just constantly going. And then we had internally, James, my partner, we knew that we had to get out of the service industry. We had to stop the Maltese scene. Unfortunately, it's become too expensive for development. So the cost of a developer went up so much that to provide the services to the Maltese wasn't feasible because at the end of the day, a Maltese business can afford so much.
Yes.
If you're a mom-and-pop shop, you can't be spending $15,000 on a website, which you might or might not get a return on because then you have to spend the marketing on. There was a lot of things. And we said, okay, we're going to have to look at making our money from a wider world. And my business partner came up with the idea of the pub quiz. And he said, what about putting a pub quiz online? People love them. And what you would do is you have people playing this pub quiz from all over the world. They pay a small fee, and that money goes into the pot. And whoever wins the pot.
It's the pot. Okay.
I was like, okay, very simple concept. Let's build it, see if it works. And actually, it was a surprising success. The build wasn't as good as it should have been. Or could have been first time. Yeah, we sort of put it together very quickly and saw what happened, and we were getting amazing response. Our return on investment was really strong. I was like, okay,
now we can spend the money on Quizando, the platform.
To be honest, so we built a second version, and then we had some ideas for live games. Because at first, the initial games were sort of like spread over a period of time. It's like a leaderboard. So you can play today, tomorrow, you can play a couple of times, and whoever's at the end. But then we wanted these live sort of games. So I'm playing against you right now. But that required much more server capacity. It required a lot more technicalities to it. And that was our second build. And we knew we're going to need money to scale up to where we need to go to, you know, like a proper system. So I had to go down the whole funding route. For the first time ever in my life, I had to go ask people for money, which is the weirdest thing, especially when you're a sort of a self-made entrepreneur in Malta, building things on sweat equity and asking people, give me your money.
I like that, sweat equity. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's what you can get away with a lot in Malta. Mm-hmm. But when you're going out, the money you need to build these things is, unless you have a lot saved, is quite phenomenal. So we have to start knocking on doors. And that was, again, when I had to relearn the lesson of selling once again, because again, we were trying to pitch the product. We were trying to sell the product to people.
And something that people wouldn't understand.
Wouldn't understand.
Away,
so. And it was hard. And it was like, we knocked on a lot of doors. Some people didn't get it. Some people weren't quite. They thought it was gaming. It was iGaming, which is risky. And
some people just don't like iGaming.
Yeah, no. The reason why we actually built that was because it's a skill game.
Yes.
And there's no gambling involved. Yeah. Like my granddad was a gambler, and he gambled away two houses. And that's why we never actually got into that. My partner also has a similar story. So we didn't want to get into the ethical issues of it. And we thought this was a nice medium ground because people who are using their heads shouldn't get as addicted. And plus, we'll still put in principles so that they can't be addicted. I don't want someone spending €1,000 a month on my site and losing money. At the end of the day, it's, you know, it's sort of moral side of things. Yeah, so we started looking for money on this, and we were getting a lot of shut doors. Mm-hmm. We spoke to, like, some VCs.
But you went all over, because you're always on a plane, it seems, going to speak at some conference or some event.
That was a sort of knock-on, because first we went to the VCs, and the VCs said...
VCs are venture capitalists. Okay.
So we went to the big money abroad, and we told them how much we needed. We needed $600,000. Mm-hmm. So not phenomenal amounts, but it's not amounts that you're going to get on an idea here in Malta.
Yeah.
And they said, we like the idea. We think it's great. Come back to us when you need $5 million. Mm. That was literally, I was like...
Because they want a bigger return, essentially. That's how they work.
Well,
so,
No. So the reason is, basically, the cost to actually manage your portfolio is the same for $600,000 as it is for $5 million.
Oh, how nice to be in that position.
So that is why they don't take the risks on the small projects. I learned this very much later in the thing. I was like hitting my head against the door. Why aren't you giving me money? You want to give me money later, when I need more money, and not now. And anyway, that was the long and short of it. And we said, okay, we're not going to get this thing funded. Mm. And then we heard this magical word called ICO, initial coin offering, the blockchain business. I heard it first early, well, mid-2017. I saw on a Facebook advert there was an ICO for a Lamborghini where you buy tokens, you buy part of a Lamborghini. I couldn't understand the concept at the time, but there was something ticking inside of me. Very quickly after that, we sort of like started hearing more and more about it. Then we heard of a Maltese company who issued an ICO for a law firm, and they raised X amount of funds. It was like, okay,
this could work for this.
There was the whole Bitcoin boom and all of that. And then, so I started learning about blockchain and I found out that if you want to have an ICO, you have to have blockchain in your project. So I had to learn all about blockchain, and I had learned the values of blockchain, which were absolutely amazing. It's truth, transparency, integrity of information. So the idea is that it's an honest record forever and ever. And these fit with me perfectly. And we went on a whole funding round, and we never launched the ICO.
You've got your funds. We
ended up getting our funds through here and there, through local people, and we built up the platform, launched it, and then before we launched it, we realized there's an added opportunity, and we actually merged it with entertainment, and we're helping influencers and celebrities around the world monetize their audience.
But they do like specific quizzes, so you might have somebody talking about pop music or fashion or cars or whatever their love is.
Do you know Matchbox 20?
No.
Okay. Do you know Boyce Avenue? No. because there's some names I can't say right now. Whatever they talk about, we create a quiz for them so that they can engage with their audience. Their audience pays to play. They take a cut of that. We take a cut of that, and the audience gets a cut as a winners. And we've monetized engagement. We've changed the whole way.
I'm going to do one about shoes.
Of course. Come on. We'll sign you up today.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Wesley Alul, for telling us about many of the hats that you've worn over time, most recently Quizando. And you've been listening to me as well, Monique Chambers, talking to this week's Entrepreneur.
Thank you for listening to this week's Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. I'd also like to thank Carmela Greg and Redent Abdillah for the production of this show. The show is aired every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and repeated every Friday at 7:30 p.m.